Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
Final hour of KJ and Lyons here on WEEI. Thank you so much for hanging out on a Tuesday night. 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. That's Adam Schefter earlier here on the WEEI afternoon show discussing Drake May will get the start this weekend against Houston. And John, how can I best put this? I thought it would happen next week. So by it not happening next week, but this week, I don't see it as much of a rush. I know you saw it around week 9 or 10. Do you feel like this is a rush?
I do, and I think it's partially a reactionary move to last Sunday. And we talked about this to start the show, and if you missed any of it, Odyssey app is free, Apple Podcasts. You can find us under Weekend Shows, KJ and Lyons. I ask you this question, KJ, and I want to hear your response again. If Jalen Polk gets both feet in bounds, is Drake May starting this Sunday?
No, because I think you have more time to develop whatever the development was. I'd even add another game to that. Hey, if DK Metcalf gets tackled and it's only a field goal and not a 59-year-old touched, 59-year-old.
Talking about age differences.
You're right, exactly. Maybe I'm thinking some things of myself and my own. A 59-yard touchdown and it's only a field goal. This is a team that's 3-2 and not 1-4. And then the question may be, hey, could this potentially be something that Drake may have to wait towards the end of the year to get on because you want to see what happens? You don't hear these stories or reports of mutiny and these different words that have been used, or Drake May doesn't get, or Jacoby Brissett doesn't get asked, do you think you're still the quarterback of this team? So none of those questions are going on, really, of just two minuscule things happening, and it's a 3-2 team versus a 1-4 team.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree completely, and I know you used the DK Metcalf example, and you're right. Even later in that game, maybe if you don't get that field goal blocked, right? Even if Metcalf scores that touchdown, but you don't get that field goal blocked, even if Joey Sly doesn't miss the field goal against Miami, maybe you're only going for a field goal at the end of that game instead of needing to score a touchdown. So, like, these little tiny things, to me, have swayed it. And look, I think I understand there's some frustration with Jacoby Brissett. I thought the first 3 weeks of the season, it was really not his fault at all how bad the offense was. I thought against San Francisco, he was really bad, and I thought against Miami, he was bad too. But it's not just a him problem. Like, you still have the worst offensive line in the league. You've started 5 combinations in 5 games. Your pass catchers, well below average, better than last year, but well below average. You have a starting running back who's fumbled 4 times in the first 4 games, got benched, looked better after, but still, that's a concern. And you have a play caller who I think, at least for me, there's some significant questions there, especially from a couple of these games. So, yeah, is Drake May ceiling higher than Brissett? Sure. But I think if you look at all this other stuff going on around, I don't think it was really their plan or really a good thing to put him in against a Houston defense that is loaded with talent and one of the best against the pass in the NFL.
No, wait, I have to bone a pick with you because Juju Smith-Schuster had 130 yards receiving last night.
Oh, yeah. So that broke my heart.
Well, maybe, I don't know if it's better. It just was a lot worse last year.
Well, maybe a part of that was Juju wasn't fully healthy last year.
Yeah,
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt
there. And it was an unhealthy situation, right? Yeah, it can do something both to your body and your mind.
Yeah, certainly. So, that's my issue. Like, again, I think Drake May's going to be good. I want him to play this year. But you look at this whole, and you had said, KJ, I feel like you've been saying for months, like weeks through 2 through 7 is the tough time. And and you're right. And you look at these games around him, though. You play Miami a couple days ago with their third string quarterback. They're not playing well. Their coaching staff doesn't look like it's fully on the same page. Next week, you have a Jaguars team that's 1-4, just scraped by with their first win. Then the week after that, you have a Jets team who just fired their head coach and who is the one team that Drake May's at least seen some regular season action against. And then after that, you have a Tennessee team that I think is one of the worst teams in the NFL. So The point being, you have all these better spots to potentially start Drake May as, by the way, it looks like old friend Mookie Betts just hit a home run, so wish we could get players like that.
And Castellanos goes deep to left?
I looked up and I saw it. I got distracted.
Focus.
But you look at all these spots. That's why I look at this Houston game and I say, I think it's a reactionary move, and I don't think it was part of the plan. And I think it's, again, he might be good. I think he will be good. I just don't think this week was the right time to do it.
All right, I'm going to give you a couple of five-game stat lines, and you tell me which one sounds like that would be more of Drake May stepping into the situation now. If he went 21 of 35 for 175 yards, averaged a TD over this time, over five-game time, he gets sacked maybe four times a game, and he runs for 27 yards. Would you take that stat line for Drake May right now?
You know, honestly, yeah, I guess. I wouldn't feel great about it, but, I mean, he's a rookie, first ever few starts, yeah.
Okay, how about 18 for 30, 195 yards, two touchdowns per game, sacked once, and only rushes for about 6 yards a game?
I would take 18 for 30, I would take that.
Okay, line one, that's Deshaun Watson's average over five games this year. Line two, that was Baker Mayfield's first five games with Alex Van Pelt the year they went 11-5. So either way, if you want success, it's not going to be Drake May taking off with his legs, and you're going to have to run the ball.
Yeah, and I think this is a team, too. They're built to run the ball. Like we talked about it earlier in the show, 7.9 yards per carry against Miami. I mean, I've been yelling for 2 days why you didn't run the ball more in that late game situation. Like, regardless of whether it's Brissett or May, they should be able to run the ball at least reasonably effectively. Maybe not against Houston because that Houston front's pretty good. But going forward, like, I look at the rest of their schedule, like, okay, the Jets front will give them some problems running the ball. It already kind of has, right? But it will. Other than that, I'm not – maybe the Colts front, right? DeForest Buckner is there. But that's – it's so not too many opponents coming up the rest of the way that I'm worried about blowing up the Patriots' run plays.
Well, here's the thing. We've seen in the NFL week by week, you just don't know what roster you're going to get.
Sure.
Because of injuries, no one saw what happened in Miami. And also no one sees Miami as a second place in the AFC East team. But that's why it's almost kind of dangerous looking at the schedule moving forward, because we don't know what Drake May is going to give you. We don't know how he looks when he's taking calls under center. If you're trying to get the play action going, because that's probably the only way you're going to at least freeze the defense from just taking off on you, is somehow they've got to say, okay, wow, the run game has been effective. We've got to respect that. But now it'll leave at least a millisecond for Drake May to be able to get a pass off. I don't think he'll effectively be able to do that out of the gun, because I think Ramondre Stevenson is a guy that concerns you more coming out of an I formation with that type of speed coming downhill than standing next to the quarterback and having to probably take a lateral step first before going, you know, north or south. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you look at the way this Alex Van Pelt West Coast offense is. Not that they won't do shotgun at all, but it's based really under center, outside zone, stretch run, play action off it. Like, that's what it's based around. And my concern with Alex Van Pelt is I don't know how well he's going to adapt to different things that come up. I haven't loved some of his play calling situationally here, but I know that he's going to try to be under center with Drake May, and that's what they're going to go to. And I think for the play action game, I think it will happen. I mean, we saw, I think, which was maybe Jacoby's second worst play of the season, was when he had DeMario Douglas wide open on that deep pass and just threw a bad pass and didn't make it. But that was a play action stretch play, and DeMario Douglas was wide open for a massive gain. So I think we've seen some evidence that the action on it and the routes, at least in something like that, can work. It's just, can Drake May then step up and hit a pass like Brissett couldn't?
KJ and Lyons, WEEI. We'll continue the conversation here about the Patriots next. Plus, we also salute Louis Tion, who passed away today. Also, the Jets got rid of Robert Saleh and what that means with the Aaron Rodgers saga. It's all very, we still have about another 40 minutes to go, so hang out. But right now, it's time to trend with Zach Coe.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Bruins down in Sunrise kicking off their regular season campaign against the Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers. And, well, it hasn't been much of a Stanley Cup hangover for the Panthers. They're up 5-2 after two. Two goal scorers for the Bruins are Pavel Zacha and Charlie McAvoy. Juuso Korpisalo got the start in net for the Bees after Jeremy Swayman was evidently not ready to go after signing just a couple days ago. Big news on the Patriots front this afternoon as Adam Schefter is reporting that the team has made the decision to start third overall pick Drake May for this weekend's matchup against the Houston Texans. Pats welcome Houston to Gillette on Sunday, kickoff set for 1 p.m. In other NFL news, the New York Jets announced today that they fired head coach Robert Saleh after Sunday's loss in London to the Minnesota Vikings. Defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich has been named the interim head coach. In addition to the Bruins, there are two other NHL games a part of the season kickoff. Kraken and Blues faced off in Seattle a little bit earlier. The Blues got the best of the Kraken 3-2 the final there. And later tonight, the Blackhawks are in Utah to take on the Utah Hockey Club in their franchise debut. Pair of National League Divisional Series games going down today. Phillies and Mets played at Citi Field. Mets got the win in that one 7-2 to take a 2-1 series lead. And the Dodgers and Padres shift their series to San Diego. Middle of the first in that one, 1-0 Dodgers after a Mookie Betts solo home run. And sad news coming from the Red Sox today. Red Sox Hall of Famer Louis Tiant has passed away at the age of 83. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More KJ and Lions coming up after this.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
Yeah. KJ and Lyons, WEEI. Thank you so much for hanging out on a Tuesday. John, I know we'll get into the football talk here, but I am just watching this Hurricane Milton, which is now back to a Category 5.
Is it?
It's now at 100. So here's the thing. Back in college, I had a chance to do like a weather apprenticeship, where I got to hang out with the television news guy and weather guy. He ended up getting me a great job at like working in the deli with his neighbor, who was the manager of a grocery store at the time. But the thing you really want to watch are the Miller bars. And if you want to use a sports analogy, as that Miller bar number goes down, it's like the spin rate on the ball increases. So this thing is down to 902. When it drops below 900, you're talking about something that's wound so tight. Like, I think at one point, the eye of the hurricane was only 4 miles wide. That's how tight it was. That was when it was at 897 millibars. It's at 902 right now. So this is, I mean, I don't want to be an alarmist or anything like that. Trust me, there's a lot of that going on television. But I do have to salute those who are taking heed. This is really good that you don't hear a whole lot of fake news stuff with this one. Nobody's playing. When I tell you that this could be Katrina on steroids for Tampa, half of Tampa could be gone.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations where, you know, went down to a Category 4 and maybe there was a little hope that it would, you know, maybe continue to go down in intensity, and then it's just back up to a 5.
Here's the other thing I learned is the Gulf of Mexico has the second warmest body of water after the Indian Ocean, just because the Indian Ocean is an ocean. This is just the Gulf. About 80 degrees average, okay? Once that hurricane starts hooking down towards the northwest side of Cuba, it goes into this trough of warm, warm water. Water close to 90 degrees, okay? That's what feeds a hurricane, hot water. Then as it starts to make its way towards Florida, Florida has like this shelf that you come out, and it's like a pool. Think of your backyard pool. Where normal pools, it starts 3 feet and it gradually goes down to, you know, up to 15 feet. This is one of those that's like 3 feet, 3 feet, 3 feet, 15 feet. So for about 100 plus miles off of the coast of Florida, it's just like a 3-foot pool of water. I mean, it's deeper than that. It's like 50 feet. But if you notice that the 3-foot portion of your pool is always warmer than once you get to the 15 feet because there's more water that the sun has to warm. So it makes even warmer water at the edge of Florida as that thing is coming. That's why I think what's happening is they're going to let you know it's a Category 5, but I think it's going to be a high 4, maybe close to a 5 as it gets pretty close to that shelf. It's going to be nasty.
Yeah, and I mean, Florida's obviously no stranger to bad storms, hurricanes, and whatnot, but the whole vibe, KJ, and you know more about the weather stuff than I do, but like the whole vibe and everything.
I'm a well-versed man. Yeah. Renaissance man, yeah.
Feels a little different. Right? Like,
yes.
There's been, you know, every so often there are these specific major storms that everyone remembers.
Right.
This kind of has that vibe around it. Like, there's more anxiety for it, there's more seriousness around it than even hurricanes that have hit earlier this year. Right? It just feels the whole vibe around it, from meteorologists to residents of the state, feels a little different.
Like, if there are three, I know you tune in for the sports talk. Sorry for the Weather Channel sponsored. No, it's not sponsored by, but they could always sponsor KJ and Lions if they want. The three that I remember that are massive was Andrew, and Andrew is the one they call the Red Cross payoff. Like, people are still receiving checks because of damage from Andrew. Andrew came with such a wind force, and it was such a surprise. It's like they clock some of the winds at like 216 miles an hour, like just completely leveled houses. Like, the reason why structures you might hear say, hey, is it suited to withstand an F5 structure? Andrew was that one that introduced, like, this has to change something because we've never seen anything that strong. Then the second one for me, like in terms of the really big ones that you'll never forget, is Katrina, because it was broadcast pretty much live on television, and because New Orleans is a foot under, it starts as a foot under sea level. So it was like, okay, this is nothing but a bowl waiting for water to come into it. I think this is going to be the next one, like, that I'm always going to remember, because it's literally a 100 year storm. My daughter went to college, she got her master's at University of Houston, and they get some intense stuff, but that usually is, hey, it's coming up through like Cuba and Mexico and then starts to get to cooler water. This one has ridden all along the warmest water possible in the Gulf, and then is going to hit land. That is just going to be brutal.
Yeah. Looks, sounds, and everything feels like it's just going to be devastating.
Yeah, I know a lot of our listeners have ties to Florida. Yeah. And
wishing the best for them.
Yeah, so, you know, hopefully your people are out and things can be replaced. People cannot. All right. So with the Patriots now replacing Jacoby Brissett with Drake May for this Sunday's game, I guess some people are now going to argue the things that Mayo has said, and it was about the plan, and I would say this was the plan almost all along, because I think the big hint that you got was out of camp, Jerod Mayo saying, you know, Drake May was the better of the two quarterbacks by the time we finished the preseason. So I think that was a bit of a hint, even though we're going with Jacoby. But he already kind of told you that, hey, I think this guy is ready more sooner than you think.
Yeah, I think the plan was definitely to play him this year. Like, because I don't know if you remember, KJ, like right after he got drafted, there was some whispers, I think even some reports, like, hey, he might need to sit out all year, right? Like, I think the plan was always he's going to play this year. I just think the way things have worked out over the past 4 weeks and into today is not really what the plan envisioned.
Remember,
that's what I'm getting at.
Remember I said last week going into the game, I said over these next two games between this Miami game and the Houston game, Drake May should see at least 12 minutes?
Yeah, I do.
Well,
he's
going to see 60. He's guaranteed. Like, if you take in the over of my 12 minutes, I mean, just think how rich you could be right now. But yeah. So there it is. I felt that we were about to see more of Drake May, even if it was just in mop-up duty or, okay, let's see if he can make this. Let's see if he can run the 4-minute offense, even though we may be down 17. Can this guy come in and get us 7? But we know that the balance of the game with timeouts and so forth. Now, here's the crazy thing. If someone had gotten a turnover and he'd just done that, you keep him in the game. But I think you give him a chance to try and run that 4-minute offense. if the game is not in the balance. Now, the game was so bad. Tell me this game against Miami didn't feel like that. That the Jets-Patriots game from a couple seasons ago. Where it was just
was that the one that Marcus Jones won?
Right.
Oh, that was brutal.
This was, I heard people say, this is the worst game I watched. I was like, you don't remember that?
No. I don't think this is, honestly, post-Brady, I don't think his top five worst loss.
No. What about Indy?
Yeah.
Indy
last, how about the Saints last year?
Oh,
the Cowboys last year? How about the 49ers in 2020? What'd they lose that game? 33-6?
I'd say Cowboys last year was just like, oh my God.
The Bills in 2020 on Monday Night Football beat you by like 30.
Or when the Bills came here and was celebrating everything. Like, you remember that? It was
The thing. So, and don't get me wrong. I thought the Miami game was a brutally bad loss and a game they should have won. But, yeah, I mean, in the grand scheme of the last 5 years, I don't think it's a top five loss, which I think is probably more a commentary on where they're at as an organization. But
well, I think it becomes the fans' expectations. We'll be here tomorrow night, and you don't want to miss us have the conversation with the Patriot way. What I still believe two of the three tenets are happening. And I think Gerard Mayo just proved me today that the second one is in play. That's tomorrow night here on KJ and Lions, 6 to 10 p.m. here on WEEI. But I think with Gerard Mayo is people need to probably back off him a little bit, right? Because he was getting all the darts. And he's delivered what the fan base has wanted, and I believed it was part of the plan to get Drake. Because remember I said about with Jacoby Brissett, with him having only a one-year deal? Like, having a one-year deal really means you only have about a 12-game contract.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so anything is relative if you know that this is not going to be the guy who's coming back next year. So I think now the question is, we know Brissett isn't coming back next year. Guess who you think is on the clock to see if they're coming back next year?
Alex Van Pelt.
At this point, they may drum him out like Alex Van Halen. Because it's literally one of these situations where now you say, okay, Alex Van Pelt, you're going to get the majority of the season to prove what you can do with the guy. Right?
Yeah,
Sean, go ahead.
No, well, so I think there's another additive to this too. Like, I've been critical of Alex Van Pelt, especially against Seattle and even more so against Miami. But Gerard Mayo deserves some blame for some of this too, right? Like, because you went into Miami, a team that has a bad run defense, and you have a good running game, and you have a bad pass offense, and you came out throwing the ball all over the place, which tells me that was part of the game plan that Gerard Mayo approved. So that's a knock. And don't get me wrong, that's a knock on Van Pelt, but that's also a knock on Mayo. And then I've been hammering that end of first half situation, and especially that end of game situation, not running the ball at all. Like, Gerard Mayo is the head coach. He can say, hey, Alex, let's run the ball once or twice here, and he didn't. And maybe that's one of those growing pains that we're only 5 games in, so, 10 games in, he'll do it. But I think that's something, too, for Mayo. Like, we can blame Alex Van Pelt, and I do, but he's also the head coach, and he has to step in when he sees things like that aren't right.
So let me ask you, because you mentioned with the Miami game planning, if you were Miami, how would you have game planned for the Patriots? Would you have been more concentrated on stopping the run or stopping the pass?
I would have done two things. I would have been all blitz, base run and pass. I would have been completely all blitz.
John, what are you going to put more emphasis on, stopping New England's run game or trying to stop?
Yeah, their run game overall.
Right. Yeah. So in fairness, you've got to change it up a little bit because you've been so dependent on the run game. And remember, Antonio Gibson started the game. So it wasn't like in the first series you could just come out and pound. Now, Ramondre Stevenson, when he got in there, show improved and everything. But I think that should have given you the flexibility to say, okay, the run game is there. We should be able to throw the ball because they can't stop the run game. That run game should have them at least frozen a little bit. Now, where I think it goes to is you just don't have the accuracy there with Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah, but also, like, part of their job as the head coach and the OC is to anticipate what Miami's going to try to stop and be able to counter it. And they obviously guessed wrong coming into the game because Miami wasn't able to stop the run at all. I mean, you average seven. Even though I know Stevenson had the 33-yard run, but, I mean, you're averaging 6-7 yards a run even without that run. And I think they ran the ball like half as many times as they threw it, or roughly. Like, to me, that's unacceptable from your head coach and your OC. And I put a little more blame on the OC, but the head coach is the head coach and deserves blame for that, especially as the game developed.
You know what I would love to see about that stat, about the 7.9 yards? How many of those yards came on third and long where a draw play potentially was called? Right, where it doesn't get you the first down. Let's say it's third and 12, and you run it for 8 yards. You still got a fourth and four, so you're punting. Because they've been in a lot of third and long situations this year, and they haven't really been trying to throw out of those formations. So, yes, Stevenson, I think, has recaptured his energy that needs to be there, especially now with Drake May back there. And I think if you can pound the ball with Stevenson, again, the way that he was able to kind of pick up his energy against Miami early in the game, then I think it opens the play action for Drake May. I think you have a better ability to extend the pocket. You know, if Drake May has to roll right or left, that buys a little time. That probably better frees up a Pop Douglas or a Jalen Polk, where these guys can be able to catch and run. It feels like when these guys catch, there's really no more to run because the play has taken quite a bit of time. Again, part of that is Brissett. Part of that is the line. But the idea is you want to be able to have the scripted play look busted and go big. This is what the team needs.
Yeah, and that's a great point, too. It feels like they've had a lot of long developing plays. And even when they're trying to get the ball out in quick game passing,
right,
it feels like either Jacoby's missing it, the line's getting blown up right away, or receivers aren't getting to their spots quick enough. Like, even those plays feel like they're taking way too long to develop, especially in the passing game. Like, just way too long to develop. And it's one thing if it takes a while to develop and you have a great offensive line and a quarterback who can get the ball out as soon as he needs to, but you don't have those things. Like, you need to be able to get the ball out quick. So if there's one thing, and it's not the only thing, but if there's one thing that Drake May, I think, might bring to this offense that is better than Brissett right away, is I think he will do a better job of just getting that ball out quicker.
That's the hope. But I do know if there's one thing he will be able to do is at least extend the play a little bit better. Even if, like, we don't need you to run, but if you're able to escape out just a little bit, it buys extra time for a receiver to get downfield, or your tight end to be freed up off of some type of bracket by a linebacker towards the middle, maybe who's operating as a spy. All right, you don't want to miss KJ and Lyons tomorrow. We'll talk more of Drake May getting the nod for the start. Plus, we'll talk Celtics tomorrow. Plus, of course, I mean, I probably would guess that the screams for Swayman to start Saturday are all ready to go. So we'll talk about that tomorrow as well. What happened in New York today, I saw it coming. And I saw it coming last year when Nathaniel Hackett, who had failed in Denver, and you could clearly see that they hired him in Denver because they believed that he would be able to get Aaron Rodgers there, that when Nathaniel Hackett was hired as the OC, that Robert Saleh's days were numbered. Because if this wasn't your guy before, but we know whose guy it is, and the guy who it is coming, you have no say in this. You've lost your team.
Yeah, and I think it was a combination of, I wonder, do they blame Saleh for Zach Wilson not working out? And then on top of it, him and Rodgers maybe weren't the best of friends, which we know matters to Rodgers. So, like, there was a lot of stuff going on here. But, I mean, we're talking about a team that, I know they've had some issues, but they're second place in their division. Like, they're not in a terrible spot.
Right.
So you wonder, is this more about, like, just the collective, hey, we've been bad for a couple years and we're not 4-1 now, so we want to get rid of this guy? And just not so much just, because even in fairness to Saleh, Rodgers is only 5 games into his Jets career and he's coming off a torn Achilles.
And he's already got the guy fired.
Right. Like, I know he was there last year for 4 plays. So really, he's 5 games into his Jets career and he's coming off a torn Achilles. So, I mean, the Jets did win 7 games last year. What right, 7-10 after Rodgers got hurt? I mean, it's tough to put, and I'm not a huge believer in Saleh, but it's tough to put a lot of blame on him when you can do that.
Well, I think Woody Johnson, the owner of the team, made a very bold statement of the coup didn't happen the way that they thought it would. So they named the defensive coordinator the interim head coach and not Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah.
You figured the way this would go would be Nathaniel Hackett would then become the head coach. Aaron Rodgers would really become the de facto offensive coordinator. And I think Woody Johnson was just like, This is how you do it, and this is psychologically brilliant. This is why these guys are owners and not necessarily players. See, by removing Robert Saleh, he no longer becomes the face of the malcontents in the locker room. What I think you're going to end up happening is Rodgers is going to continue to try and do his own thing, take the interim coach for his weakness, and have the entire team turn on him, not name Alan Lazard.
Yeah, I think that's a definite possibility.
I think that's what he's setting him up for.
Like, if you're a Jets player, I mean, you probably look around like, hey, we won 7 games without you last year. Then you skipped a day of minicamp to go to freaking Egypt on vacation.
Right.
Now you're back, and there's just all this weird stuff that goes with Rodgers and this, like, weird ego, selfish vibe thing.
It feels like Breece Hall went from being excitable to just shut down.
Yeah. And Rodgers always tries to act like the smartest guy in the room constantly.
Right.
Like, that's got a grade on people. Now he's, and even if he didn't directly do it, right?
Too much peyote in Northern California.
Yeah. Like, and also, like, let's put the onus on Rodgers. If he plays better in that London game, maybe Saleh's still the head coach. Like, if he plays better and they win that game against an undefeated Vikings team, maybe Saleh's still the head coach.
If they win, I think it delays some things. But there were things that I'm seeing with the team that just don't seem to, like, there's just too much talent on that team for them to be disconnected, and I think it's beyond Saleh, right? I think it's like...
Yeah, that's maybe fair.
Right, and I think it's Aaron Rodgers was starting to show up Saleh and knew that there would be no repercussions on Aaron Rodgers. So I think Aaron Rodgers probably fed Woody Johnson's ego saying, you know what, this guy's lost the team. You could clearly see people are not there or what have you. And I would say Aaron Rodgers throwing 3 interceptions should have Hackett and Aaron Rodgers pulled into a room and asked, what the hell are you two doing to my team? But I think because Aaron Rodgers is the marquee name, he's on the Pat McAfee show every week, so that's national exposure. I've seen this in my industry. So you can get rid of somebody who's good for the culture in the name of getting someone who's good for the pages. And I think that's all Rodgers provides is good or bad, and mostly bad PR, is going to run what's going on. If you thought that you were seeing Robert Saleh getting the cold shoulder from Aaron Rodgers, just wait until one of those defensive linemen gets in Aaron Rodgers' face, because he don't care. Like, he probably, like, Aaron Rodgers to him was just a dude on a video game. Yeah, he didn't care about no Aaron Rodgers. He's going to get in his face and saying, I don't care if you're 40, if you're doing this crap out on the field. Like you said, we won 7 games without you, and that dude really sucks. So what's really going on? Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing, too, is, like, because Rodgers, again, technically only 5 games in to the Jets' career, I know he's the big name, I know he's the MVP, the champion, but coming off the injury and not playing well now, I don't think he's built up enough credentials to really sway that whole locker room.
You know, my father is a lifelong Green Bay Packers fan, and so when, you know, Aaron Rodgers left, I asked him, like, are you going to follow him to the Jets? He was like, nope. I was like, damn. So, like, he must really not be like, because my dad, I mean, he'll follow a star guy, understands how business works, they go to another team. But he's like, yeah, no. And I think Danica Patrick, have you ever read that letter that Danica Patrick wrote to the Aaron Rodgers?
Time ago. I don't remember.
I have it bookmarked somewhere because it pretty much reads Aaron Rodgers' life out at that time, and you've seen a lot of it play out. What are those things called? It's prophetic. Like, those things she was saying in that letter about him, and I don't want to paraphrase the things that are in it, but I forgot what magazine it was in. It might have been in GQ.
Words or Spells.
Yeah, so, but you just see all the things that Aaron Rodgers has turned out to be since him and Danica Patrick broke up. And when she wrote that letter to him, it was like it had so much code in it that now it's not even code anymore. You want to do Professor Lyons next?
We certainly can.
Yeah, let's do Professor Lyons next, and then we'll wrap KJ and Lyons, the Tuesday edition, here on WEEI.
This is KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons about to get out of here in about 6 minutes or so. Thank you so much for being part of the show. Very lively discussion at the beginning of the show discussing Drake May. At the time, it was still very breaking news. And then, John, we also understand at some point people start to tuck kids in bed and they miss out on us. So shout out to all those driving around still checking out KJ and Lions. But if you missed any of the show, the Odyssey app is free. It would be under weekend shows, and you'll be able to play it chapter by chapter, especially the conversation about Drake May.
Which I thought was a great discussion, by the way. A lot of callers, too, early in the show.
You like did you like my old radio trick I pulled there? It was like a little... You're like, what trick did you pull?
Yeah.
That's how good of a trick it was. Yeah. Like, it was a great trick. I'll explain to you what I did one day. But yeah, it was... I think there's... The great thing about it, at least people are having a hopeful discussion moving forward.
Yeah, it was definitely, I would say, and there's some skepticism, but at least I would say the most undertones of hope I've heard since they beat Cincinnati in week one.
Right, and even that was kind of like, can you believe it?
Yeah, right.
All right, so one of the features we do on KJ and Lions, which is the show you usually hear, either as you're sneaking back in the house from a late night Saturday on a Sunday morning, or you're getting up early and you're about to annoy your other neighbors by turning on the blower. That's how early we're on. There's a segment called Professor Lines, and I have to determine, with John's brilliant brain, is he bull jiving me or not? So hit it, Zach.
Just what in the hell do you think you're doing? Learning about Cuba, having some food.
I'm John Kimble, a new kindergarten teacher.
Who still wants to make out with me in the middle of class?
I've got a hangover. Who knows what that means?
Doesn't that mean you're drunk?
No, it means I was drunk yesterday.
All right, KJ, I got three questions for you.
All right.
True or false? We've talked a lot about the Patriots' offense. The Patriots' defense is worse on third down than their offense.
The Patriots' defense is worse on third down than their offense. Ooh, they've given up some big plays. They've stayed on the field longer. There have been some penalties. I'm going to say yes.
You are correct. It is true.
Professor!
Professor!
The offense is 24th, defense 27th.
Oh, wow.
Bruins have now given up 6 goals in this game, and they're on the penalty kill, so it could be 7th. I almost thought I saw a 7th. So with that in mind, Jeremy
Castellanos goes deep to left.
Jeremy Swayman last year was top 5 in goals against average and save percentage.
Mm-hmm. Goals against average and save percentage.
Top 5 in both.
Oh. I'm going to say false, and I think the reason why I'm saying false... No. I'm going to go true, because he didn't have to play the bulk of the games. He split him with Olmark, so I'm going to say that's true.
It is false.
Oh, I should have stuck to my guns.
Stop lying.
He was 5th in save percentage. He was 8th in goals against average.
Okay.
Final one here, KJ. Drake May, he's going to be starting this weekend. True or false, he was actually better 2 years ago in college than he was last year.
That is true.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because I barked about that, and that's been my disappointment in Drake May is, in a weak ACC, I wondered, how did he not improve on the numbers from 2 years ago, despite everything you're about to tell me what he didn't have?
Yes, he had better completion percentage, more yards, more touchdowns, fewer interceptions all 2 years ago.
So 2 out of 3, that's a passing grade, right?
Yeah, that's 66. D+.
That you can kill the music, Zach. Yeah, so we have fun on this show, right? I like to expose John's big brain. And also, we do Lion's Den, where no animals are hurt in the making of that segment. So we have Would You Rather, More Likely To, either. Or I don't want to give everything, but have you noticed, John? More shows are suddenly doing a lot more Would You Rathers on this station.
Yes. You know, I think it's because of us.
What do you mean you think? We know. You know, the thing is, that's why you have the creative part of More Likely To, either or, because then that's the secret in the sauce.
See, KJ and Lions has its own creative department.
It does.
KJ, for those wondering.
Well, no, it's both of us. It's stick to the plan. This is what we've told management, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Both of us, okay. So, look, if you missed any of the show, again, the Odyssey app is free. And before we get out of here, big ups to the life of Louis Tiant. Just absolute dominating in the 75 World Series. And then would go on to the Yankees, like the original Johnny Damon, and became one of the great pitchmen for major products there in New York. And that's what I remember as a kid. I didn't see him as a Red Sox pitcher. I wasn't old enough. So just an amazing soul and a great story that's been celebrated through the years.
Yeah, certainly a loss that'll be felt throughout all of Red Sox Nation. And it's been a tough year for Red Sox Nation. The Wakefields, Larry Lucchino, Louis Tion. It's been a tough last 12 months.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us. Have a great Tuesday night. Great Wednesday morning with the Greg Hill Show. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, 6 p.m. here on WEEI.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.